The Fellowship of the Ring, Cassette 9.
Book 2. Chapter 1. Many Meetings. Frodo woke and found himself lying in bed. At first he thought that he had slept late, after a long unpleasant dream that still hovered on the edge of memory. Or perhaps he'd been ill? But the ceiling looked strange. It was flat, and it had dark beams richly carved. He lay a little while longer, looking at patches of sunlight on the wall, and listening to the sound of a waterfall. "Where am I? And what's the time?" he said aloud to the ceiling.
"In the House of Elrond, and it is 10 o'clock in the morning," said a voice. "It is the morning of October the 24th, if you want to know."
"Gandalf!" cried Frodo, sitting up. There was the old wizard, sitting in a chair by the open window.
"Yes," he said, "I am here, and you're lucky to be here too, after all the absurd things you've done since you left home."
Frodo lay down again. He felt too comfortable and peaceful to argue, and in any case he didn't think he would get the better of an argument. He was fully awake now, and the memory of his journey was returning. The disastrous shortcut through the old forest, the accident, the prancing pony, and his madness in putting on the ring in the dell under Weathertop. While he was thinking of all these things, and trying in vain to bring his memory down to his arriving in Rivendell, there was a long silence, broken only by the soft puffs of Gandalf's pipe, as he blew white smoke rings out of the window. "Where's Sam?" Frodo asked at length. "And are the others all right?"
"Yes, they are all safe and sound," answered Gandalf. "Sam was here until I sent him off to get some rest, about half an hour ago."
"What happened at the ford?" said Frodo. "It all seemed so dim, somehow, and it still does."
"Yes, it would. You were beginning to fade," answered Gandalf. "The wound was overcoming you at last. A few more hours and you would have been beyond our aid. But you have some strength in you, my dear hobbit. As you showed in the barrow, that was touch and go. Perhaps the most dangerous moment of all. I wish you could have held out at Weathertop."
"You seem to know a great deal already," said Frodo. "I have not spoken to the others about the barrow. At first it was too horrible, and afterwards there were other things to think about. How do you know about it?"
"You have talked long in your sleep, Frodo," said Gandalf gently, "and it has not been hard for me to read your mind and memory. Don't worry. Though I said absurd just now, I didn't mean it. I think well of you, and of the others. It's no small feat to have come so far, and through such dangers, still bearing the ring."
"We should never have done it without Strider," said Frodo. "But we needed you. I didn't know what to do without you."
"I was delayed," said Gandalf, "and that nearly proved our ruin. And yet I'm not sure. It may have been better so.
I wish you'd tell me what happened."
"All in good time. You are not supposed to talk or worry about anything today, by Elrond's orders."
"But talking would stop me thinking and wondering, which are quite as tiring," said Frodo. "I'm wide awake now, and I remember so many things that want explaining. Why were you delayed? You ought to tell me that at least."
"You will soon hear all you wish to know," said Gandalf. "We shall have a council as soon as you are well enough. At the moment I will only say that I was held captive."
"You?" cried Frodo.
"Yes, I, Gandalf the Grey," said the wizard solemnly. "There are many powers in the world, for good or for evil. Some are greater than I am. Against some I have not yet been measured. But my time is coming. The Morgul Lord and his Black Riders have come forth. War is preparing."
"Then you knew of the riders already, before I met them?"
"Yes, I knew of them. Indeed, I spoke of them once to you. For the Black Riders are the Ringwraiths, the 9 servants of the Lord of the Rings. But I did not know that they had arisen again, or I should have fled with you at once. I heard news of them only after I left you in June. But that story must wait. For the moment, we have been saved from disaster by Aragorn.
Yes, said Frodo. It was Strider that saved us. Yet I was afraid of him at first. Sam never quite trusted him, I think. Not at any rate until we met Glorfindel. Gandalf smiled.
I have heard all about Sam, he said. He has no more doubts now.
I'm glad, said Frodo, for I have become very fond of Strider. Well, fond is not the right word. I mean he's dear to me, though he's strange and grim at times. In fact, he reminds me often of you. I didn't know that any of the big people were like that. I thought, well, that they were just big and rather stupid. Kind and stupid like Butterbur, or stupid and wicked like Bill Ferney. But then we don't know much about men in the Shire, except perhaps the Brelanders.
You don't know very much even about them, if you think old Barliman is stupid, said Gandalf. He's wise enough on his own ground. He thinks less than he talks, and slower. Yet he can see through a brick wall in time, as they say in Bree. But there are few left in Middle-earth like Aragorn, son of Arathorn. The race of the kings from over the sea is nearly at an end. It may be that this War of the Ring will be their last adventure.
Do you really mean that Strider is one of the people of the old kings? Said Frodo in wonder. I thought they had all vanished long ago. I thought he was only a ranger.
Only a ranger? Cried Gandalf. My dear Frodo, that's just what the rangers are. The last remnant in the north of the great people, the men of the west. They have helped me before, and I shall need their help in the days to come, for we have reached Rivendell, but the ring is not yet at rest.
I suppose not, said Frodo. But so far my only thought has been to get here, and I hope I shan't have to go any further. It's very pleasant just to rest. I have had a month of exile and adventure, and I find that has been as much as I want. He fell silent and shut his eyes. After a while he spoke again. I've been reckoning, he said, and I can't bring the total up to October the 24th. It ought to be the 21st. We must have reached the ford by the 20th.
You've talked and reckoned more than is good for you, said Gandalf. How do the side and shoulder feel now?
I don't know, Frodo answered. They don't feel at all, which is an improvement, but he made an effort. I can move my arm again a little. Yes, it's coming back to life. It's not cold, he added, touching his left hand with his right.
Good, said Gandalf. It's mending fast. You'll soon be sound again. Elrond has cured you. He has tended you for days, ever since you were brought in.
Days? Said Frodo.
Well, 4 nights and 3 days, to be exact. The elves brought you from the ford on the night of the 20th, and that's where you lost count. We've been terribly anxious, and Sam has hardly left your side, day or night, except to run messages. Elrond is a master of healing, but the weapons of our enemy are deadly. To tell you the truth, I had very little hope, for I suspected that there was some fragment of the blade still in the closed wound. But it could not be found until last night. Then Elrond removed a splinter. It was deeply buried, and it was working inwards.
Frodo shuddered, remembering the cruel knife with notched blade that had vanished in Strider's hands.
Don't be alarmed, said Gandalf. It's gone now. It has been melted, and it seems that hobbits fade very reluctantly. I have known strong warriors of the big people who would quickly have been overcome by that splinter which you bore for 17 days.
What would they have done to me? Asked Frodo. What were the riders trying to do?
They tried to pierce your heart with a Morgul knife which remains in the wound. If they had succeeded, you would have become like they are, only weaker. And under their command. You would have become a wraith under the dominion of the Dark Lord, and he would have tormented you for trying to keep his ring, if any greater torment were possible than being robbed of it and seeing it on his hand.
Thank goodness I didn't realize the horrible danger, said Frodo faintly. "I was mortally afraid, of course, but if I had known more, I should not have dared even to move. It's a marvel that I escaped."
"Yes, fortune or fate have helped you," said Gandalf, "not to mention courage. For your heart was not touched, and only your shoulder was pierced, and that was because you resisted to the last. But it was a terribly narrow shave, so to speak. You were in gravest peril while you wore the ring, for then you were half in the Wraith world yourself, and they might have seized you. You could see them, and they could see you."
"I know," said Frodo. "They were terrible to behold. But why could we all see their horses?"
"Because they are real horses, just as the black robes are real robes that they wear to give shape to their nothingness when they have dealings with the living."
"Then why do these black horses endure such riders? All other animals are terrified when they draw near, even the elf horse of Glorfindel. The dogs howl and the geese scream at them."
"Because these horses are born and bred to the service of the Dark Lord in Mordor. Not all his servants and chattels are wraiths. There are orcs and trolls, there are wargs and werewolves, and there have been and still are many men, warriors and kings, that walk alive under the sun, and yet are under his sway. And their number is growing daily."
"What about Rivendell and the elves? Is Rivendell safe?"
"Yes, at present, until all else is conquered. The elves may fear the Dark Lord, and they may fly before him, but never again will they listen to him or serve him. And here in Rivendell there live still some of his chief foes, the Elvenwise, lords of the Eldar from beyond the furthest seas. They do not fear the Ringwraiths, for those who have dwelt in the Blessed Realm live at once in both worlds, and against both the seen and the unseen they have great power."
"I thought that I saw a white figure that shone, and did not grow dim like the others. Was that Glorfindel, then?"
"Yes, you saw him for a moment as he is upon the other side, one of the mighty of the firstborn. He is an elf lord of a house of princes. Indeed, there is a power in Rivendell to withstand the might of Mordor, for a while, and elsewhere other powers still dwell. There is power, too, of another kind in the Shire. But all such places will soon become islands under siege, if things go on as they are going. The Dark Lord is putting forth all his strength." "Still," he said, standing suddenly up and sticking out his chin, while his beard went stiff and straight like bristling wire, "we must keep up our courage. You'll soon be well, if I don't talk you to death. You're in Rivendell, and you need not worry about anything for the present."
"I haven't any courage to keep up," said Frodo. "But I'm not worried at the moment. Just give me news of my friends, and tell me the end of the affair at the ford, as I keep on asking, and I shall be content for the present. After that I shall have another sleep, I think. But I shan't be able to close my eyes until you've finished the story for me." Gandalf moved his chair to the bedside, and took a good look at Frodo. The colour had come back to his face, and his eyes were clear and fully awake and aware. He was smiling, and there seemed to be little wrong with him. But to the wizard's eye there was a faint change, just a hint, as if it were of transparency about him, and especially about the left hand that lay outside upon the coverlet.
"Still, that must be expected," said Gandalf to himself. "He's not half through yet, and to what he will come in the end, not even Elrond can foretell. Not to evil, I think. He may become like a glass filled with a clear light for eyes to see that can." "You look splendid," he said aloud. "I'll risk a brief tale without consulting Elrond. But quite brief, mind you, and then you must sleep again. This is what happened, as far as I can gather. The riders made straight for you as soon as you fled. They didn't need the guidance of their horses any longer. You had to become visible to them, being already on the threshold of their world. And also the ring drew them near. Your friends sprang aside off the road, or they would have been ridden down. They knew that nothing could save you if the white horse could not. The riders were too swift to overtake, and too many to oppose.
On foot, even Glorfindel and Aragorn together could not withstand all the nine at once. When the ringwraiths swept by, your friends ran up behind. Close to the ford there's a small hollow beside the road, masked by a few stunted trees. There they hastily kindled fire, for Glorfindel knew that a flood would come down if the riders tried to cross, and then he would have to deal with any of them that were left on his side of the river. The moment the flood appeared, he rushed out, followed by Aragorn and the others with flaming brands. Caught between fire and water, and seeing an elf lord revealed in his wrath, they were dismayed, and their horses were stricken with madness. Three were carried away by the first assault of the flood. The others were now hurled into the water by their horses and overwhelmed. "And is that the end of the Black Riders?" asked Frodo.
"No," said Gandalf. "Their horses must have perished, and without them they are crippled. But the ringwraiths themselves cannot be so easily destroyed. However, there's nothing more to fear from them at present. Your friends crossed after the flood had passed, and they found you lying on your face at the top of the bank with a broken sword under you. The horse was standing guard beside you. You were pale and cold, and they feared that you were dead or worse. Elrond's folk met them, carrying you slowly towards Rivendell."
"Who made the flood?" asked Frodo.
"Elrond commanded it," answered Gandalf. "The river of this valley is under his power, and it will rise in anger when he has great need to bar the ford. As soon as the captain of the ringwraiths rode into the water, the flood was released. If I may say so, I added a few touches of my own. You may not have noticed, but some of the waves took the form of great white horses with shining white riders, and there were many rolling and grinding boulders. For a moment I was afraid that we had let loose too fierce a wrath, and the flood would get out of hand and wash you all away. There is great vigor in the waters that come down from the snows of the Misty Mountains."
"Yes, it all comes back to me now," said Frodo. "The tremendous roaring. I thought I was drowning, with my friends and enemies and all. But now we're safe."
Gandalf looked quickly at Frodo, but he had shut his eyes.
"Yes, you are all safe for the present. Soon there will be feasting and merrymaking to celebrate the victory at the ford of Bruinen, and you will all be there in places of honour."
"Splendid," said Frodo. "It's wonderful that Elrond and Glorfindel and such great lords, not to mention Strider, should take so much trouble and show me so much kindness."
"Well, there are many reasons why they should," said Gandalf, smiling. "I am one good reason. The ring is another. You are the ring-bearer, and you are the heir of Bilbo, the ring-finder."
"Dear Bilbo," said Frodo sleepily, "I wonder where he is. I wish he was here and could hear all about it. It would have made him laugh. The cow jumped over the moon, and the poor old troll." With that he fell asleep. Frodo was now safe in the last homely house east of the sea. That house was, as Bilbo had long ago reported, a perfect house. Whether you like food or sleep, or story-telling or singing, or just sitting and thinking best, or a pleasant mixture of them all. Merely to be there was a cure for weariness, fear, and sadness. As the evening drew on, Frodo woke up again, and he found that he no longer felt in need of rest or sleep, but had a mind for food and drink, and probably for singing and story-telling afterwards. He got out of bed and discovered that his arm was already nearly as useful again as it ever had been. He found laid ready clean garments of green cloth that fitted him excellently. Looking in a mirror, he was startled to see a much thinner reflection of himself than he remembered. It looked remarkably like the young nephew of Bilbo who used to go tramping with his uncle in the Shire, but the eyes looked out at him thoughtfully. "Yes, you have seen a thing or two since you last peeped out of a looking-glass," he said to his reflection. "But now for a merry meeting." He stretched out his arms and whistled a tune. At that moment there was a knock on the door, and Sam came in. He ran to Frodo and took his left hand awkwardly and shyly. He stroked it gently,
and then he blushed and turned hastily away. "Hello, Sam," said Frodo. "It's warm," said Sam, "meaning your hand, Mr. Frodo. It has felt so cold through the long nights, but glory and trumpets," he cried, turning round again with shining eyes and dancing on the floor. "It's fine to see you up and yourself again, sir. Gandalf asked me to come and see if you were ready to come down, and I thought he was joking." "I'm ready," said Frodo. "Let's go and look for the rest of the party." "I can take you to them, sir," said Sam. "It's a big house, this, and very peculiar. Always a bit more to discover, and no knowing what you'll find round a corner. And elves, sir, elves here and elves there, some like kings, terrible and splendid, and some as merry as children. And the music and the singing, not that I have had the time or the heart for much listening since we got here, but I'm getting to know some of the ways of the place." "I know what you've been doing, Sam," said Frodo, taking his arm, "but you shall be merry tonight, and listen to your heart's content. Come on, guide me round the corners." Sam led him along several passages, and down many steps, and out into a high garden above the steep bank of the river.